Chapter 8. Tuesday, June 5th, 2007, 9:05 p.m. The welfare of the center was on the line, and this was a most crucial meeting. Yet Mac had an ear attentive to the barely audible sounds drifting from the baseball field through the boardroom window left ajar. Yes, he was a pastor with a pastor's heart, but he was also a baseball player. His watch told him the game was a lengthy one. The occasional outbursts of loud cheering suggest the game was close. He thought he heard humming of praise songs, but dismissed that as imaginary. But the chanting of Rue near the end of the game, so familiar to him, was unmistakable. Reuben must be up to bat, he wrongfully concluded, never dreaming Reuben would be pitching. When the chanting for Rue picked up a short time later, he was confused, knowing that Reuben could not be at the bat again so soon. But one thing was conclusive. The raucous shouting and cheering at 9:27 p.m. that he knew came from his people assured him the challengers had won. They had beaten the Grizzlies for the first time ever. One more win and they would be in the playoffs. A short time later, Phil entered the boardroom in his socks and dusty uniform, his cleats left at the door. Phil Ferguson. Brothers. Sheldon Waters. We could stand to hear some good news. Phil Ferguson. We beat the Grizzlies. It was quite a game. Everyone. Great, wonderful. That's certainly good news. Sheldon Waters. Would you like to give a report? Phil Ferguson. Yes, and as I said, it was quite a game, and I'm referring to more than just the game itself. Sheldon Waters. We're all ears. Phil Ferguson. The atmosphere was unmistakably different, both in the dugout and in the stands. Of course, this is because of Tanner's speech, which, by the way, I have listened to on my cassette player. The players were divided, and I'm sure the fans also. There was a tension, seemingly tangible. Donald Williamson. This simply confirms what we already know. I tell you, we must put a stop to this. Sheldon Waters. Carry on, Pastor Phil. Phil Ferguson. In the fifth inning, John Tanner appeared to be seriously injured. Terry Macklin. Is he okay? Phil Ferguson. He is now. It appeared he broke his leg. Terry Macklin. I didn't hear an ambulance. Phil Ferguson. Reuben Tanner said to his son, In the name of Jesus Christ, get to your feet. Well, the fact is, John got to his feet. And there was every indication he was healed. David Thomas. You mean miraculously healed? Donald Williamson. Wait a minute, Thomas. Pastor Phil said he appeared to be injured. Maybe this was something the Tanners cooked up to impress the church, you know, to gain credibility. David Thomas. In all due respect, sir, that is insane. Terry Macklin. Donald, that is simply not possible. I know them both well. They are far above such treachery. Donald Williamson. I stand corrected, Pastor. Nonetheless, Pastor Phil seems uncertain, and I think we should let the matter drop. This can only make a messy situation messier. Nelson Chesney. Pastor Phil, was John Tanner's leg broken or not? Phil Ferguson. It was broken. Donald Williamson. Oh, my Lord. Nelson Chesney. Pastor Phil, please tell us plainly. Is John Tanner's leg broken at this moment? Phil Ferguson, it is not. Nelson Chesney, it seems I am happy and sad at the same time. I suppose this made the people favorable toward Tanner? Phil Ferguson, no, it didn't seem to. The people are very loyal to Pastor Mac. I think they felt that showing enthusiasm to Tanner would be a disloyalty to him. That's my assessment. Terry Macklin, Pastor Phil, I did not hear the people chanting Rue until the end of the game. Could you explain? Phil Ferguson, nobody chanted when Tanner came to bat, as they usually do, and I suppose that's because of loyalty to you. My arm was tiring at the top of the ninth inning, and I loaded the bases with walks, none out. It was very precarious, as there was no one to replace me. I had taken John out of the game in case he was not completely healed. And I must say, I may have had a less noble motive. Tanner suggested we trade spots, and at first I rejected the idea, but remembered your instruction to heed any suggestion Tanner might have. Besides, there didn't seem to be an alternative. Terry Macklin, are you saying Reuben Tanner pitched? He's never pitched. Phil Ferguson, three up, three down. I don't think he threw more than seven or eight pitches. Hard, hard pitches. It was during his pitching that people began to chant, Rue, 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 like they couldn't contain themselves anymore. Terry Macklin, I heard the chanting twice. Phil Ferguson, there were two of us on base, the bottom of the ninth, two out. We're down by one run when Tanner came to bat. It was a real tense moment, and the people began chanting Rue again. He hit the ball to the right field, and I managed to make it home from first base. It was a real close call, but the ump called me safe. Donald Williamson, so now Tanner is the hero of Bryden Falls Community Christian Center. Tanner the miracle worker. Tanner the great baseball player. A very bad dream is turning into a nightmare. David Thomas, Pastor Phil, you said you had a less noble motive. Did you think it best to get John Tanner out of the people's view? Phil Ferguson, yes. In hindsight, I was wrong. That almost cost us the game. Sheldon Waters, Pastor Phil, I for one understand. Like yourself, I have no experience dealing with a church split. Sean, we haven't heard from you for a while. Sean Edwards, our people are privileged to witness a rare miracle healing, and we are threatened. Something is wrong with this picture. I have a suggestion. Let us ask Pastor Mac to speak to Reuben frankly and openly, explaining the dire quandary the church is in. If Tanner is a reasonable man, he will forfeit his permission to give the second part of his message. Some. Amen. Sounds logical. Donald Williamson. That's a twist. Somehow we have become the beggars. Sheldon Waters. David, you know Tanner. Is he a reasonable man? David Thomas. Reuben is a reasonable man. Sheldon Waters. Pastor Mac, are you in agreement? Terry Macklin. I've already made an appointment with Reuben for tomorrow afternoon. I will fully explain the situation to him, and if he volunteers to back off, I certainly won't argue. Sheldon Waters. Is everyone in agreement? Everyone. I agree. Sheldon Waters. Pastor, is it true you are taking your vacation early? Terry Macklin. Yes, I'm actually on vacation right now. Also, Vivian will be away from her desk. Pastor Phil will be shouldering normal church responsibilities. I'll be concentrating on the Tanner issue. I need time to pray, to hear from God. Sheldon Waters. It doesn't sound like much of a vacation. Terry Macklin. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. I feel responsible for the predicament we're in. I will do what it takes to get us out of it. Sheldon Waters. We're all responsible, Pastor. Everyone. Amen. That's right. Sheldon Waters. We want you to know we're all behind you. Everyone except one. Amen. Wednesday, June 6th, 2007, 9:15 a.m. Composed. That's the word Mac was searching for to describe his wife, now busy putting the final touches to the breakfast meal. As he sat at the table sipping his coffee and watching Vivian moving in different directions, stirring, heating, wiping, setting, the word came to him again. Composed. My wife is a composed person. And then, is it a good thing to have a composed wife? He backtracked to the day he met Vivian in Bible school, not much older than their Katie. She certainly was not excessively composed then, he recalled. Composure started to replace real and frivolous and passionate about 15 years ago, it seemed to Mac. Invasion came slowly. Composure limited the church, but once it got a grip, it began to fan out, conquering other areas of life, marriage, motherhood, relationships with family. Composure is learned, Mac realized. But from whom? After some consideration, he realized it was he who was her silent mentor, and others, surely. But mostly, he had to admit, it was his influence. When Mac was at the pulpit, he was composed. It was something he chose and practiced to be. It was expected. When communicating to church adherents, over the phone or in person, he was composed. It was only natural his young wife, only a few feet away in the front row of seats or standing proudly by his side, would emulate her husband. To have a non-composed wife assisting a composed husband just wouldn't do. It was difficult for Mac to consider composure without taking into account Superintendent Johnston. Now there was a composed man, more so than the most poised pastor at the convention. He had watched the man grow in composure over the years as his influence grew from pastor to district elder to assistant superintendent to the top job. He was expected to be more composed than everyone under him, and he managed quite well. Mac had to admit both he and Vivian enjoyed being composed. It set them above. People responded to them cautiously. Composure was the wall that gave them distance from the numbers. The wealthy and dignitaries could empathize. But while Mac threw off his composure when he got home, Vivian remained cloaked. He liked a composed assistant, but not a composed wife. A poised wife is not a close wife, not a fun wife. Oh, the price we have both paid for significance. And the twins, he thought woefully. Already Kyle was learning composure, something to be put on like deodorant and hairspray and a clean shirt. One day a poised young lady, there would be plenty at Norwestern Seminary, would be attracted to his composure. And they would together have a stable and orderly and composed life. And my Katie? He wondered. She was determined to marry a pastor. He considered the many pastors he knew, and yes, with few exceptions, they were quite composed. And then he looked into himself. Do I still want to be composed? Is it too late for decomposure? Would I be willing to pay the price? Would my family follow? Is it too late for them? Is there similarity between composure and fakery? Were the Pharisees composed? How about the apostles? Did you have a good sleep? Vivian interrupted her husband's meandering thoughts, setting a plate of sausages and eggs and toast in front of him. No, but thanks for asking. Ketchup, please. Are the kids at school? I haven't seen them much lately. They are saying the same thing about you. It's that time of the year, final exams. Are they doing okay? Mac asked. As far as exams go, they're doing fine. Other problems? Yes. The division that has split the church has split the twins. Vivian's indignation was rising again. No. And again, no. They were so close. It started when Kyle followed me out of the church door and Katie stayed behind. Kyle has not spoken to her since. He's quite disturbed with her. He feels she's being disloyal to you and to me. And what do you think? I have to agree. We always taught her family comes first. I'll have to have a talk with her. She's having a busy week. Finals, band practice, Saturday's performance. Is she taking appointments? Mac asked. She needs her father, Vivian responded. She's being pulled two different directions. Did you know she resigned her position as lead vocalist to Todd Anderson? But why? Blame the plumber. The plumber. The plumber is dividing my congregation, the board of elders, the baseball team, and now my family. I'll be glad when this thing passes. Will it ever pass? Or will the rippling effect go on and on? I can't answer that, Max said. My place is to be sensitive to the Lord. He is the only one who can get us out of this. You did the sausages and eggs perfectly. Again. May I never take you for granted. This came in the mail, special delivery. Were you expecting something? Vivian queried as she handed Mac the blue, white, and red envelope. Wow, sort of. It's from head office. I know. Aren't you going to open it? How about you open it? Mac said. Read it out loud. I think you might find it interesting. Soon Vivian began reading the short letter. Dear Brother and Pastor Terry Macklin, please prayerfully consider letting your name stand for Assistant Superintendent of the District of... Terry! Does this mean what I think it means? This was a rare occasion when Vivian lost her composure, and Mac wished a quick wish it would never return. They want you as Assistant Superintendent? Did you know about this? Are you as surprised as I am? Does this mean we will be moving? What about the pastorate here at the center? Hold it, slow down. I had an inkling I would be given an invitation for advancement, he replied, taking the letter from her. It says the first four-year term will begin in September of this year, should my name be ratified by the district council. I'm certain that's just a formality, and I'm sure I'll be able to hold my position as senior pastor if I choose to, though I will be traveling intermittently throughout the states and Canada. The kids will be away at school, so you can accompany me on some of the trips. I think you'll find it enjoyable. Also, we have the choice of relocating, maybe back home. But the twins, Vivian said, this is the only home they know. This will be a family decision, Max said. They might want to move closer to their grandparents and other relatives. Will our traveling expenses be covered? Certainly, Max said, and we can expect a major hike in pay. Whose signature is on the letter? None other than Superintendent Martin Johnston. I remember when he was an assistant, Vivian said. Maybe one day you will fill his position. You must be honored. It is an honor. I think my oration at the convention impressed everyone there. Our church is the talk of the denomination. I think they like the way we have reached out into our community, and they were really impressed with our baseball team. I had a strong hunch I would be given a promotion. It is something I have hoped for a long time, to be influential on a broader scale. It's time to move up the ladder. Let's not mention it to the twins until their exams are over, Vivian said. Mac considered composure again. He knew he must grow. Mac would have to go. He would be Assistant Superintendent Terry Macklin. Vivian would not have to grow, he reasoned. She already matched the superintendent's wife. Do I really want this? Wednesday, June 6th, 2007, 9:45 a.m. Superintendent Martin Johnston was disturbed by the secretary's voice on the telephone intercom. "Sorry to bother you, sir. I know you generally don't accept incoming calls before 10, but the gentleman stressed that it was very important. He said his name is Donald Williamson of Bryden Falls, Canada. Do you wish to accept this call?" "Donald Williamson? Oh, yes. Hello, Donald. Of course I remember you. The last time I saw you was at my father's funeral about 5 years ago. You were one of his closest friends." "Yes, I miss him too. As I speak, I'm looking at your picture next to Dad's on my office wall." "Surprised? Your picture's been there with several other pioneers for many years. May we never forget the sacrifice your generation has made to the denomination." "We're the ones who are honored. How's the weather in Bryden Falls? It's been a while since I was there." "A problem at the center? Please tell me about it." "Really? Really? I'm very surprised, sir, and a bit disturbed. Terry Macklin gave such a glowing report on Bryden Falls Community Christian Center just a few days ago. Frankly, sir, if I were not hearing it from you personally, I wouldn't give this any credence whatsoever." "So this all happened since the conference?" "Tell me, Donald, is this Tanner a licensed minister from another denomination?" "He's a plumber? A layman? It's not our policy to invite laymen to preach." "Let me see if I got this straight. You're saying a plumber asked permission to speak to the congregation and Terry obliged?" "Oh, I see. Terry denied him permission and this Tanner appealed to the board. He seems like a very determined fellow. And what was the decision of the board of elders?" "I'm disappointed the board couldn't come to a consensus." "Oh my, how was the elder's resignation explained to the congregation?" "I see. It seems this plumber split the board of elders, and Terry thought it would be less divisive to the assembly to let the plumber speak than to deny him. Now tell me again, sir, what shape is the center in at this moment?" "Really? Really? In hindsight, does Terry now consider his judgment to be, shall we say, less than wise?" "If he frankly admits to an error of judgment, I don't see a reason for me to interfere. I have confidence Terry will work it out, but I certainly appreciate you alerting me." "Say that again?" "In all due respect, sir, I can't imagine Terry doing that. He's responsible to protect the congregation." No. I couldn't let that happen. The plumber will not speak to the congregation again. I'll get in touch with Terry this morning. I'm sure this can be worked out." "Well, it sounds like a peculiar time to be on vacation." "Oh, I see. Don't be concerned about that, Donald. I will be discreet." Wednesday, June 6th, 2007, 10 a.m. Beer in hand, Tree drooped his depressed body over an old depressed lawn chair on his front porch and stared angrily into the bright June morning, recounting the last play of the last game of his career. It wasn't often someone outfoxed Tree, but he was certainly outfoxed by Reuben Tanner. When Rue stepped back in the batter's box, Tree wanted to protest to the umpire that he stepped outside the box and should be called out. Not that he saw Rue step out, but that mattered little. He could have, and that was reason enough to squawk. But everybody's attention was on the ball floating over the second baseman's head. Spike should have anticipated the spin on the ball that bounced crazily away from him, Tree determined. The big man looked silly, slipping and sliding, chasing the white ball, spinning across the sideline, but still in play. Tree was sure a good throw from Spike to home could beat Phil Ferguson running to home plate. The throw wasn't perfect, but not bad. The back catcher caught the ball just above his head and immediately swept his glove inches in front of home plate as Ferguson was sliding in feet first. Was the out or safe mattered little to the Grizzlies fans, or to Tree, who was where he shouldn't be, only a few feet from the plate. Or the other Grizzlies players, all where they weren't supposed to be, outside their dugout. In unison, they all screamed, "Out!" to influence the plate ump. The umpire had his thumb protruding from his fist, ready to jerk it upwards, a signal the runner was out. But then he hesitated, and instead waved his arms across each other to signal the runner was safe. And all the noisy protesting and tantrums of the Grizzlies did not convince him to reverse his call. The Grizzlies lost the game and the championship by one run in a fraction of a second. And Tree was mad at God. Again. God was chuckling. No, he was having a serious belly laugh, thoroughly enjoying Tree's letdown, or so Tree convinced himself. God knew how much Tree wanted to take the trophy to his grave with him, but he denied him that small victory. Less than half a second. Why couldn't God have given him a tiny instant of time? Losing first place in the league was a confirmation of just how worthless he was. Okay, that's settled, Tree spoke to himself. I am an entirely useless person. What's the difference? Soon it will be all over. 4 more days. And then he thought of the plumber who took the game from him. It was Rue who hit the Grand Slam home run. It was Rue who struck out 3 batters in a row, himself included, at the top of the 9th. It was Rue who hit the winning run. But it was hard to hate a guy, try as he did, who had so much grit, even though he was so yucky pleasant. In the name of Jesus Christ, get to your feet. Those words wouldn't go away like other words do. I heard Tanner say it twice, and the kid obeys him like, come for supper, and the kid runs to the supper table. It just doesn't make sense. The leg was broken, and then it's not broken. Kind of spooky. The kid's on the ground, and he's hurting big time. And then the kid's standing. No more pain. Go figure. That Tanner's an unusual dude. Wish I knew what made him tick. And then, I wonder how Mac's handling his church problems. This win ought to cheer him up. And the miracle, or whatever it was, should be the equivalent of a cool half dozen beer on a hot June day. Wednesday, June 6, 2007, 10:30 a.m. Vivian was getting groceries, so it was up to Mac to answer the phone before the recorder cut in. It could be important. Pastor Macklin speaking. Well, hello, Superintendent Johnston. This is a surprise. I'm doing fine, sir, Mac lied. And yourself? Oh? Well, actually, the person who contacted you was speaking the truth. We are going through a time of trouble. I want you to know, however, that the trouble mostly arose recently since the convention. I was not being deceptive when I spoke about the center.
Thank you for saying that, sir. I must say, I needed that encouragement. I haven't gone through anything like this before.
Yes, sir, I realize my mistake and I take full responsibility.
Yes, that is correct. I gave my word that Tanner could speak 2 successive Sundays. I feel I must keep my word.
But, sir, I can't do that. As I said, I gave my word.
I certainly share your concern, sir. I will be speaking to Tanner in a few hours. I intend to fully explain the entire matter and hopefully he will gracefully rescind.
Yes, sir, I received it in this morning's mail. I was honored.
Thank you for considering me. I know there are many qualified men you could choose for this position.
Oh?
I understand, sir.
Yes, sir, I understand.
Yes, I'll keep you informed.
Goodbye, sir.
Wednesday, June 6th, 2007, 1:50 p.m.
Mac had been in many evangelical churches over the years, but never had he seen a pulpit so noble as his own, tastefully fashioned, undoubtedly for the purpose of dignifying the word preached. It was just a few days ago he was telling a number of his contemporaries the danger of the pulpit if its power was not properly harnessed. How stupid he had been, he thought, to allow an untrained layman access to this pulpit. How different life would be if he simply refused. The miserable, cloudy day was a fulfillment of predicted rainy weather to befall Bryden Falls for the next few days, and the atmosphere in the sanctuary was equally gloomy. It was a wounded and disappointed Mac, clad in sweats and t-shirt, two baseball gloves and a ball at his side, who was leaning on his pulpit trying to determine who betrayed him. He knew he ought not to try to guess who contacted Superintendent Johnston. His guess could never be more than a speculation, and suspicion could fall on an innocent. But restraint was difficult. And perhaps betrayal was an unfair word. Did his people not have reason to distrust his judgment? It didn't seem feasible someone from the congregation would contact the district office. Denominational headquarters was a world unfamiliar to most. Perhaps someone from the board, where there was some awareness of ecclesiastical complexities. But who? I better stop there. In a few minutes, he'd be meeting with Reuben Tanner. Funny, he thought, how his future somehow got placed in the hands of a plumber backcatcher. If Rue did not rescind, Mac could say goodbye to the assistant superintendent posting. Martin Johnston was subtle, but his ultimatum clear. It took all Mac's willpower to put uprightness before expedience, to keep the word he regretted giving. He wanted the new posting. No, he deserved the posting. Had he not been exceptionally diligent all these years? And he ached for advancement. And how could he disappoint Vivian again? He was sorely tested. A few minutes before two, he heard a vehicle in the empty parking lot and knew the plumber had arrived. Baseball stuff in hand, he headed out the door. "Thought you could help me loosen my arm for Friday's game," Max said as he handed a glove to Rue, thinking it would help him keep his anger, as well as a few other emotions, in check if he activated his body. Rue liked that.
"Certainly, Mac. Good idea. Do you want to walk to the diamond?"
But at that moment, the clouds decided to unload, and both men scurried inside the sanctuary. Phil Ferguson was drawn to the sanctuary by the smack sound of ball on glove, and was amazed to see the senior pastor and the enemy layman casually throwing the ball down the center aisle of the sanctuary. Concluding some things are best unseen, he returned to his office and to church affairs. Behind Rue was expensive glass in the foyer swinging doors, as well as breakables in the back of the church. Behind Mac was the lighted pulpit both men put in place a number of years ago. Mac had an accurate pitch, Rue was an excellent catcher, and as long as no one saw them, likely no harm would be done. After some baseball chatter, Mac got down to business. "I guess you're aware of the dilemma the church is in." He pitched a ball down the center of the red carpeted aisle, aiming at an imaginary home plate. Rue answered with an affirmative nod and returned the ball. "As you know, I took your appeal to the board. They were surprised someone would appeal my judgment."
Smack.
They had never encountered an appeal before. There was a lengthy discussion, but for the first time they could not come to a consensus. As you know, Tony Bourque resigned over the matter. Smack. It was a blow to the board and to the congregation. Mac tried to discern a response from Rue, but he seemed unaffected. They returned the matter into my hands, assuring me they would back me up whatever I decided. Frankly, the only reason I gave you permission to speak to the congregation was because I thought less damage would be done than denying you. Smack. You're influential at the center, and I thought you might take advantage of your influence and try to get to the people another way. This would be cause for a major confrontation whereby everyone would be hurt. Reuben was silent, methodically returning Mac's pitches. This guy isn't hearing me. Mac was getting agitated. It's ironic. I was giving a talk at the conference at the same time you were speaking to my congregation. The title of my message was Pulpit Power. I spoke how dangerous a pulpit can be, both to the speaker and to the listeners. No response. Smack. When I got home, I found our congregation split. I was amazed at just how quickly a church split can happen and how devastating it can be. Dozens of people phoned. Most were anxious and upset. Smack. I was so shocked, I couldn't respond to their anxieties. I felt like I had the wind knocked out of me. The back catcher had nothing to say. So Mac asked him, "You ever get the wind knocked out of you, Rue?" Finally, a response. "A couple of times. It's incredibly painful." Smack. Well, he's alive, Mac thought. Since your request to address the congregation, the board is split, the congregation divided, the baseball team's not the same, and my own family is at odds with each other. The influence the center has had on the community is in jeopardy. We risk losing our witness. The smack of the ball hitting Rue's glove got increasingly louder with intensified pitches, fueled by Mac's swelling frustration at Rue's seeming passiveness. At an emergency meeting, the board decided to reverse my decision to allow you to speak this Sunday. Such is their concern for the welfare of the congregation. Smack! However, I told them I'm obligated to keep my word, and they, or at least some, concluded they were likewise obligated to keep their word to me. Still no reply. Mac felt he was degrading himself, begging for mercy. Smack! Doesn't this guy have a heart? I got a letter this morning from the district office offering me the position of assistant superintendent. I've been secretly hoping for this for years. Vivian was very excited. Smack! Now the pitches were very hard. Still, Reuben handled them with ease. This was followed by a phone call from the superintendent. Someone contacted him, and he phoned me to communicate the fact the offer will be canceled if I allow you to speak on Sunday. Smack! No, he wasn't that blunt, but that was his implication. I suppose it would be safe to say an opportunity will not come up again for many years. Smack! And then Mac had no more to say. It was Rue's turn to speak, but he didn't. Mac went into full pitcher's windup. Smack! 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 Mac was losing control, both of his emotions and his pitches. A hard pitch went wild, threatening the sound equipment in the audio booth, and Rue barely managed to block it. Mac wound up to pitch again, harder this time, but instead dropped his glove and ball to the floor. The two men stared at each other in silence. Mac had his answer. Rue would not rescind. Shoulders drooped, Mac walked to the pulpit, his back to the plumber. The words were inside him, but refused to come out. "No, I will not let this happen. I will not allow you to speak to my people again. Enough damage has been done. I gave you the opportunity to back off gracefully, but you refused. Now I must reverse my decision. You give me no choice. Instead, he reached for a book he had placed in the pulpit, Martin Johnston's Building a Church on Wisdom's Foundation. Reuben, I want you to read this book. It will help you to see from another vantage, perhaps one you have never considered before. Will you do that? Of course, Mac. And can you do it in the next 3 days? I know that's asking a lot, but I want you to read it before Sunday. Perhaps this will persuade him. I will read it within the next 3 days. Thank you. Well, I guess our meeting is over. Could you walk me to my van? Rue asked. I have something for you. I think it stopped raining. Certainly, Mac said. At Reuben's plumbing van, Rue handed Mac a book entitled The Way It Is, authored by Larry Jones. Rue bore Mac's words. Mac, I want you to read this book. It will help you see from another vantage, perhaps one you have never considered before. Will you do that? Mac looked for mockery in the plumber's face, but worse, could find only sincerity. Mac felt trapped. How could he refuse a request from Rue, who used his same words to make the same appeal? How could he say no when Rue just said yes? Doesn't this guy get it? I am the pastor. He is the layman. I am the minister, the leader. He is my ministry. It's my place to minister to him, not him to me. Mac, defeated, used Rue's response. Of course, Rue. See you Friday evening at the game, was Mac's way of saying goodbye. And then, was John's leg really broken? It was broken, said the man a few words. And Reuben's plumbing van made a large circle and exited the parking lot. Thursday, June 7th, 2007, 6:15 a.m. Sally, I hope we don't lose contact with each other after you and the children move east. Yes, that's right. And it won't cost any more as long as we continue to phone early in the morning. Not that that's an issue. Your friendship is what counts. Oh, don't thank me. I enjoy our morning chats. Tell me, Sally, are you nervous driving a long distance by yourself? I talked it over with Reuben and I could make the drive with you and fly back. Are you sure? I'd be happy to do it. Well, okay then. I'll be praying for you. I assume you have a dependable car? That was good of Trevor to give you the minivan. I know, Sally. It's unusual for a divorced couple to maintain their love for one another. I feel so bad for your entire family. Are you saying you are afraid for Trevor? But the kids will still maintain contact with their dad. They can write or phone or email. Oh. So this is a final goodbye? No birthday cards? No Christmas gifts? No summer visits? Sally, are you sure that's the way to go? I see. I can understand that. It sounds so final. Just 3 more days. Did you manage to locate a place to live? I hope you don't have to spend too much time in a motel. They can be expensive this time of the year. It's too bad you don't know anyone at the other end. Yes, I know you want a fresh start, Sally. Yes, I am sure you will find work soon, and hopefully you will find a good school for the kids. Yes, Reuben and I hurt for you and your family, but we will never stop praying. Never. Of course, that includes Trevor. Where are you and the kids meeting Trevor Sunday morning? Thursday, June 7th. 2007, 7:15 a.m. Katie was careful not to wake her parents. They were on vacation, such as it was. Let them sleep. As she opened her bedroom door, she noticed a note in the hallway. "Miss Katie Macklin, the honor of your presence is requested by Pastor Terry Macklin this evening on the 7th day of June in the year 2007 for a delightful dining experience at Mario's Pizza immediately following band practice. RSVP before 8 a.m. of the same date. P.S. Please wear pigtails." "Yes, Daddy," she wrote, "I'll be in pigtails." And she slipped the note under the bedroom door before quietly leaving for school, where another final exam awaited her. Thursday, June 7th, 2007, 7:30 a.m. Reuben was in his office keeping his word. He thought how nice it must be to be able to write a book, to convey one's convictions in a comprehensible manner, to tear down opposing arguments, to neatly package one's passions and certainties between two glossy covers. Building a church on wisdom's foundation was such a book. Little wonder there were over 100,000 in print. Mac was right. The book exposed Reuben to a church perspective he never before considered. The simple plumber was impressed, overwhelmed, by the flow of logic and reason that made it very plain to him his Sunday morning speech was out of order. It was no longer a heavy rope that tethered Reuben to his conviction that many at the center must be converted again to the Lord Jesus Christ. The commotion in the church caused by a sermon weakened the rope to a string, no longer able to sustain much tension. He was a plumber, a good plumber, but a simple and naive plumber, sheltered from church complications. He felt he had a message for the people of Bryden Falls Community Christian Center. Perhaps, apparently, he was wrong. He could not be prepared for the devastation his word of warning had caused. One time he preached to a sizable audience, once only, and the church he helped build and cherished was on the brink of permanent schism. The private plumber was now the public enemy. How close he was to caving. A few more smacks from Mac's appeal to relinquish the pulpit would have ended the contest. Mac would have had his pulpit back, and Reuben would have returned to his world of toilets and tubs and sinks, eventually forgiven. Building a church on wisdom's foundation was putting tension on the string still binding him to earlier convictions. Attention increased with every turn of the page. Page 27. A community of Christians, though knitted together by God Himself, is fragile, and words spoken from the pulpit must be delicate and communicated with the same care a mother communicates her affections to her young child. Truth alone is not restorative. Truth must be robed in gentleness. Truth must not be delivered by the blacksmith's hammer, but planted by the gardener's tender hands. Page 36. Ministers of congregations are a redeemed but fallen people on a journey of restoration with an awkward burden of leading others along the same road. We are the spiritually nearsighted conveying understanding we are not sure we have, the emotionally maimed doctoring the emotionally maimed, the confused giving direction, the guilty judge removing the speck from another's eye. To lose this perspective, to consider oneself to be more than ordinary, to place one's confidence in self-attained insights, is indulging in fantasy. And nothing is more destructive to an assemblage than a deluded minister ministering fanciful convictions. Security is building upon the wisdom of those who have walked our walk before us, those who have learned by costly mistakes, the lineage of humbled ministers of God's truth who themselves have turned to the wisdom of their forefathers. While there is prideful satisfaction in being the loose cannon, there is also accompanying havoc. When dependence upon others is forsaken for independent self-reliance, the fall of many is soon forthcoming. A minister must school himself in the understandings accumulated by others, an education of which Bible school is but a part. He must learn the art of cooperation, attire himself with the bearing of a submissive servant, earn the endorsement of his peers, for only the humble can learn spiritual values and effectively convey those values to others. Reuben closed the book to get a respite from the painful, reproving words and hid his face in his hands. What have I done? Am I the deluded minister ministering fanciful insights? Have I been the loose cannon creating havoc? I certainly did not earn the endorsement of my peers. How did I get myself into this mess? Page 51. Few would argue love is the essence of Christian community life. In a band of diverse persons, love is usually best expressed through tolerance. Acceptance of others comes easier after self-examination, after the discovery of the plank in one's own eye, after probing one's memory for past failures. How self-gratifying to be the one bringing corrections, to be the sign pointing the way, the voice crying in the wilderness of conflicting opinions. How insignificant to be the hearer only, to be the student instead of the teacher. How we each long to express our view, to have an audience, to be recognized. If each in the community were given equal opportunity to express, the community would soon be a shambles of conflicting thoughts and opinions. While unity is a fruit of time and patience, division comes in a day. A divided people may meet regularly, but the fruit of their togetherness is stunted. Together we stand, divided we fall, is a truism that must be applied to a congregation ambitious for a substantial harvest. It became apparent to Reuben why Mac refused to give him the pulpit at his first request. He read again, "If each in the community were given equal opportunity to express, the community would soon be in a shambles of conflicting thoughts and opinions." He could not come up with one reason why he should be the lone layman privileged to express his opinions before the others. He was just a plumber. How could he expect to match the competence and understanding of schooled reverends? What have I done? He asked himself again. Thursday, June 7th, 2007, 8:35 a.m. Mac was still in bed, being deliberately lazy this rainy Thursday morning, keeping his word. "So many people writing books nowadays," Mac critically mused as he perused the cover of The Way It Is. He started the book last night and had been reading since 6 this morning, wanting to get the pesky chore done behind him. Vivian served breakfast in bed. After all, they were on vacation. He had thought of writing his own book. He was already experienced and successful at writing articles for the denomination's monthly. Maybe someday when demands on his time ease up. Besides, the book inside him, he sensed, was still not completed. Mac was angry. "Here I am on vacation and I'm forced to read a book I don't want to read by a writer who has no qualifications whatsoever. Every time I have a dealing with that plumber, I come out the loser. This book is at least a quarter thicker than the one I gave Tanner." Mac's rope, the one tying him to his convictions, really the adopted convictions of others, and to his denomination, was still strong, though not so strong as before the day the plumber said, "I believe I have a message for the congregation." The cord had been weakened by innocent questions at the elders' meetings to determine the validity of the way the center operated. Mac was humbled, not having a defense, though his role as pastor was being questioned. He grimaced at the remembrance of his own words to the board. "I am a licensed and ordained minister of our denomination, and as such have agreed to abide by denominational bylaws and policies. I am committed to head office and the standard they have set." It was a veiled threat. "We stick to the way it has always been, or I'm out of here." Although it worked, the tone in the direction of the board changed soon thereafter. Mac felt like a spiritual wimp. He did not, could not, declare his own persuasions in the matter because he didn't have any. so he opted to take refuge in the convenient assumption that others were wiser than he. Tony Borg's closing of the Bible made a very sharp statement. Before, Mac and the Borg could hide behind confusion. But now the fuzziness was removed. Now it was painfully obvious they had been walking and chose to continue to walk in a direction that did not have the endorsement of the Bible. But the weakened cord still had strength. Tanner's tape might have weakened it further had he listened with his heart. He had to admit he never gave it fair attention. "I won't do that again," Mac said to himself. Mac was accustomed to keeping his word. "I will read, not skim over, this book, and then I will dismiss it altogether," was his 6 a.m. resolution. But Mac was having his world toppled. The rope was shrinking to a string. The way it is challenged perceptions Mac had always deemed sacred, comparing those perceptions to New Testament writings. Mac's problem was his honesty. Not to suggest his heart was entirely honest, whose is? But the honest part of his heart outweighed the dishonest part. Yet, like most, he was adept at slipping into denial when confronted with unwanted reality, and would have found solace there this morning except for the second problem. There was no running away. He had given Rue his word as Rue had given him his. His honesty compelled him to read the way it is. Every sentence, every argument, every perspective. The writer was like a prosecuting attorney pointing a condemning finger at the evangelical belief system, presenting evidence that many practices, though established and cherished and honored, were detrimental to the circulation of the gospel of Christ and the health of his church, causing most evangelical adherents to adopt a pygmy perspective of their potential and responsibility. And the author was also the defense lawyer, defending the truths of New Testament writings, appealing to the reader to build on the sure foundation of Christ's words, and warning of the folly of building on the sands of traditionalism. Titles, salary professionals, singular spokesmen, denominationalism, tithing, all these customs were brought under the scrutiny of the word, and, in the opinion of the author, were found wanting. Most upsetting to Mac was the writer's assault on what he called a two-tiered system, the dividing of the church into the ministerial and the laity, the special and the not-so-special. Again and again, and again and again, the author pointed to Jesus Christ as the one and only pastor shepherd of the sheep, claiming it was an insult to the good shepherd who gives his life for the sheep to call and consider a mere mortal his pastor. The writer made what Mac considered to be radical statements regarding evangelical churches, suggesting that Jesus Christ had slipped, to a large degree, from the consciousness of the people. Jesus was no longer Lord, secondary to men who propagated a substitute set of traditions. But was it true? And then Mac thought of the closed Bible sitting in the middle of the boardroom table. Mac's body weakened, and sweat coated his forehead at the possibility his ministry had been founded on nothing more than evangelical traditionalism. As a diversion, Mac tried to recall the last time he felt as disturbed as he did at this very moment. It was about 3 years ago, he remembered, when Vivian handed Mac the phone, sympathy on her face. His dad had died of a stroke. He was aged, he was wanting to be with the Lord, but such reasoning did little to stem Mac's grief. Part of his foundation and his identity was cruelly removed, and he was a wounded little boy. And now another chunk, an even larger chunk, both of his foundation and his very identity as a person, was being assailed. His life's contributions now seemed deficient, his purpose questionable. Vivian came into the bedroom with Katie's note. "Good," Mac said. "I've got a date with an angel tonight. An angel in pigtails." "A new book?" Vivian asked. "I haven't seen that one before." "Reuben Tanner gave it to me to read." "Oh?" The plumber's name made Vivian shift from cordial to annoyed. "Is he now giving spiritual direction to the pastor?" "I gave my word. I must read this book." "You gave your word? Again?" Mac needed a companion at this tender moment, not a critic. I got him to promise me to read Martin Johnston's book. I couldn't turn him down when he asked me to read this one, so I'm compelled to read it.
Really?
And did you talk to him about Sunday?
Sunday?
Yes, Sunday. You did tell him he won't be speaking.
No.
Well, Terry, when are you going to tell him?
I'm not. I gave my word he could have the pulpit 2 successful Sundays. I'm bound to my word.
Vivian's calm was fast dissipating.
No, you can't do that. You gave your word before all the damage was done. You simply made a mistake in judgment. Under the circumstances, you're not obligated to keep your word.
Aren't I?
What did the board say?
Much the same thing you just said.
And?
And I said to them what I said to you. I gave my word. Mac was losing it and matched Vivian's fire.
Suppose head office finds out. Have you thought of that?
Johnston already knows.
You told him? Vivian screeched.
Somebody else did.
But who?
I don't know. I guess it really doesn't matter, does it?
Did Johnston phone you? What did he say?
He insinuated if Tanner speaks, I will not get the posting as assistant.
Vivian was horrified. The door to an improved life was closing.
And what did you tell him?
The same thing I told the board and the same thing I am telling you. I am bound to my word.
You're throwing away our future.
I am trying to do what is right. Isn't that what a Christian is supposed to do?
It seems like the board and the superintendent do not agree with your idea of right, nor do I.
And now you have another problem.
Mac was up and getting dressed, agitated and fueled to fight back. He had been pushed around enough.
Now what is that supposed to mean?
It means I won't be there on Sunday. And how do you think that is going to look?
It won't look nice at all. I'm surprised you would put your own pride before the good of the congregation.
And I'm surprised you would put a plumber before your wife.
I don't understand. Think about it, Pastor Mac. I walked out of the church because the plumber was undermining my husband. I stood up for you. Letting him speak again is making a statement. It is telling the entire church you choose him over me. You will publicly insult me. I won't be there.
Did it ever occur to you that you shouldn't have walked out? Don't you see how it fanned the fire?
And don't you see the loyalty I displayed for you? Have you forgotten what we taught the twins? A family sticks together?
But apparently Pastor Mac has no loyalty left over for his family, having used it all up on that plumber.
Mac was not going to back down. Their voices resounded through the house. The twins were in school and he had a lot of stuff to get out of them.
And have you forgotten that I am the pastor? I am the one who gets paid to run this church, not you. And I am the husband, the head of this family. I'm not going to let a controlling woman usurp my authority.
Spats of this intensity were rare in the Macklin marriage.
Vivian was equally determined to win.
You can run your church. It's yours. Satisfied? It is all yours. But I am no longer in the picture. I will no longer be the decorous pastor's wife sitting dutifully in the front row.
You can't mean that. Surely your need to control does not surpass the good of the church, the good of your own children.
How can you speak about the good of the church and the children?
Composure gone, Vivian was quite real and quite loud.
You are putting everyone at risk with your twisted sense of righteousness. If you publicly insult me by allowing that man behind the pulpit, I will not be in that church again. Not ever. Do you hear me?
Oh, yes. You will be there on Sunday morning.
Really?
Yes, really. As soon as you realize our paycheck is at risk.
Think about it. This house, our 2 cars, the credit cards, and all the et ceteras. How can I pay for them when I no longer have a paycheck?
Out the bedroom and down the stairs, Mac went, heading for the coffee pot for a refill.
I won't be blackmailed. There are other churches, lots of churches.
Not any that would pay as well as this one.
You see, after the word gets around, I have a wife who is likely to stomp out of the church. The most I could hope for is an assistant to a pastor who could turn out to be a control freak, like the last one I assisted 20 years ago.
And then they both saw Kyle sitting at the kitchen table, a bowl of cereal in front of him.
Kyle!
The volume of Mac's voice dropped to a whisper. We heard the car leaving. Why aren't you in school? There was no warmth in Kyle's response.
A late exam. I don't have to be there until 10. Besides, my sister and I don't ride together anymore. It's got something to do with loyalty to my parents and the denomination they taught me to honor. I take the bus.
And then, is this what you two do when we're gone?
Kyle, no, Vivian responded.
Son, I'll give you a ride, Mac added. We can talk about this.
I would rather take the bus.
And out into the rain he went.
Thursday evening, June 7th, 2007. The Morelord Worship Band practicing in the sanctuary tonight and last night in preparation for Saturday's performance was as divided as the rest of the church.
Kyle Macklin. The band captain was still smarting from this morning. Never had he seen his parents brawl before, though he suspected their relationship was not near as warm as they portrayed. While his hands were occupied with making his electric guitar produce acceptable sounds, his heart was trying to determine where to place his loyalty. Should it be with the denomination? After all, he was about to deposit his future into its hands. Or should it be with his mom? She has been faithful over the years, always the dutiful mother, competently she served the center, always the supreme coordinator, fitting everybody's pieces together to make life flow evenly. Or should he set his loyalty on his dad? His dad has always been his mentor and hero. Had he reason to stop adulating him now? Yes, he had made a mistake allowing that Tanner access to the pulpit, but he has admitted his poor judgment. Everyone makes mistakes, even heroes. Listening to his parents' fight, Kyle had learned that his dad was offered the posting of assistant superintendent, and he was impressed. But now that was not going to happen. Thank you, Mr. Tanner. Kyle had not spoken to John Tanner for days. No, it wasn't fair, but to do so might be seen as disloyalty to his parents. Kyle caught the inference when John said to his father in the dugout, "I love you, Dad." He was letting everyone know he was siding with his father. Until this matter was settled, their friendship was on hold. Kyle was also angry at his sister. A little while ago, he arranged getting Katie and John together. Now he was determined to keep them apart. Whether she liked it or not, he had become his sister's guardian. Fraternizing with the enemy would go against the cause. Todd Anderson. Thanks to Katie Macklin, Todd had made a serious shift in his life. A spirit of bitterness had taken root in his young soul when the band chose whom he considered a less talented, less deserving vocalist to be lead. They all played favoritism at his expense, wanting to please the privileged Macklins. Mr. Tanner's sermon calling the people back to Christ moved him, convicted him, but not enough to bring him to repentance. But when Katie Macklin grabbed him by the arms, tears streaking her face, and said, "Todd, please forgive me. I am so very sorry. Will you please forgive me?" The bitterness lost its grip, and Todd returned to his master more sincerely than ever. Katie insisted Todd replace her as lead, much to Kyle's annoyance, and tonight he had a lot of catching up to do. Tanya Borick. Tanya was a support vocalist, was one of the few who did not need to hear Mr. Tanner's exhortation. She was already on track with Christ, mostly because of the influence of her father, Tony Borick. But the words were a comfort indeed and helped fortify her commitment to Christ. Since Sunday morning, her prayers had more depth, more fervency. She felt privileged to be able to sing praises to her Lord, before much of the populace of Brighton Falls. Tonight she was pondering the words of Jesus, "Whoever confesses me before men, him will the Son of Man also confess before the angels of God." Marie Schierling. Marie, on the keyboard, never had been born of the Holy Spirit. She never really got it. She was one of those on the outside thinking she was on the inside because she did as the insiders did, prayed as they prayed, spoke as they spoke, worked as they worked. But that was before Sunday. Jenny Tanner found the young lady weeping, broken, confused, and gently led her to a decision for Christ. Since then, Katie adopted Marie into her heart, and the two have since been knitted together. Mark Rogers. Mark loved to pound drums, and it mattered little if it was in tune to Christian music or secular. In Mark's head, there was always a rhythm happening that needed his accompaniment. If he didn't have sticks, he used his hands. If he didn't have drums, he used a table or desk or his legs. He bounced from church to church wherever opportunities led him. Mark wasn't at the center on Sunday. He was drumming elsewhere. Though a bit spiritually dense, he immediately picked up the negative vibes within the band. The news of the split at the center was rapidly spreading to other churches, and Mark was well aware. Who's on whose side? Which side should he choose? Questions he was trying to sort out as he pounded his drums. Jenna Morgan. Jenna was sweet on Kyle, and though Kyle never hinted interest in Jenna, Jenna was not without hope. The split in the church was an opportunity to demonstrate her loyalty to the handsome band captain, to inch her way into his favor. Who he ignored, she ignored. His enemy was her enemy, his ally, her ally. No longer was she on friendly terms with Katie and John, and the others instinctively knew that warmth towards either of the two would be at the cost of her friendliness. Katie Macklin. When Katie was 10, 11, and 12, she had a special, unusually intimate relationship with Christ. Somehow, maybe it was the excessive adulation of parents and friends, her focus changed from Christ to Katie. With self-absorbedness came selfishness. With selfishness came manipulation of others. But all that was changed by the direct words of Mr. Tanner, beckoning her to return to her first love. And she was determined to never, ever remove Christ from the throne of her life again. She feared John had made a decision to go on in life without her. She looked for, ached for, eye contact, but there was none. The relationship had ended before it began. And could she blame him? Who would want a partner with a control freak? If only they could talk. If only she could express her heart. She no longer wanted her way. She wanted Christ's way, whatever that be. She would submit to her husband as unto the Lord. Choosing Christ had the appearance of choosing Mr. Tanner, but Mr. Tanner was only the messenger. Yes, praise God for his courage, but she sided with Christ alone. Her loyalty was thoughtfully placed on him. Why couldn't her family see that? Is that why her dad wanted to see her tonight? To draw her loyalty back into the family fold? No matter what anyone thought, Kyle, John, whoever, Katie Macklin would sing praises to her God with all the talent God had given her. Before the lost and the saved, she would offer the sacrifice of thanksgiving to her sin-bearer, the one she called Lord, Lord, the one who lovingly wooed her back to him. John Douglas Tanner. John was confused. He had chosen Christ over Katie, but the attraction to her was stronger than ever. Though he ignored her, he noticed the pigtails, and her movements, and her laughter, a different laughter than before, not the "do you notice me" laughter, but a genuine mirth. She seemed real somehow. What happened? And why was Todd doing lead? And why was Jenna cold to him? And why was Mark so quiet? John seriously considered quitting, though a quitter he wasn't. What would be best for the band, for the people they were supposed to be ministering to? Perhaps he should not be so close to Katie. Perhaps the band would have a better chance at coming together if he excused himself. Something to talk over with his dad, he thought. His dad. What he must be going through. The pressure must be intense. How did all this happen? Why would God choose a plumber to speak to the congregation? Was it really the voice of God his dad heard? Being 18 isn't easy. Thursday, June 7th, 2007, 9:15 p.m. Mac went over his day as he sat in Mario's waiting for his daughter. He had a few more regrets to add to his lengthening list. He wished he had never agreed to read Rue's book. He was ashamed of the angry words he spoke to his wife. He regretted his son seeing Mom and Dad at their very worst. And with a quick glance at the opening front door, he had another regret. Katie brought three of her friends. Daddy, I invited Marie and Tanya and Todd to join us for a little while. Mac genuinely loved these kids, but they were his ministry. He was on vacation. He wanted to be alone with his pigtails. Hi, guys. Glad you could join us. Are you hungry? It was Todd who spoke up. We don't want to bust your party, Pastor Mac. We each have something to say, and then we'll be off. Is that okay? Mac was curious and a little uptight. He didn't need more complaints. Sure, have a seat. Are you ready to order? The waitress asked. Please, give us a few minutes. We'll call you when we're ready, Mac spoke pleasantly to the plump lady. Pastor Mac, said Tanya Borick, I know our church is, like, going through a lot of problems and a lot of people are, like, against Mr. Tanner and everything, and a lot of people don't want him to speak on Sunday. But I feel it's only right to, like, tell you that I really enjoyed his message, you know, his talk about Jesus and everything. I know I'm just a kid, but I, like, thought you might want to know that Mr. Tanner, well, he, like, helped me in my walk with Jesus. You know, I feel, like, stronger somehow. Thank you, Tanya. I appreciate your comments. What else could Mac say? And then it was Todd's turn. I recommitted my life to Christ after being challenged by Mr. Tanner. You did? Mac was genuinely surprised. Well, Katie had something to do with it. He grinned at Katie. And you, Marie? Mac knew the young lady was nervous. I received Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior on Sunday morning. I'm different now, you know? I can't explain it. I guess it's what the Bible calls being born again. But Marie, I thought, I know, Pastor. I guess everybody thought I was a Christian. But I always knew something was missing, you know? Like I was empty inside. And now? Pastor Mac, her smile was big. I feel just great, you know? I just love singing praises to Jesus. Before it was, you know, just words. But now it's different, you know? I know, Marie. The three got up to leave. Mac looked at Katie inquiringly, and Katie nodded an affirmative nod. No, Katie and I want you to join us. Let's have pizza, lots of pizza. Let's eat and talk and eat some more. Tell me, how did the practice go? Are you ready for Saturday night?